we now have episode 23 in our weekly radio drama entitled To the Ends of the Earth, based on the Acts of the Apostles and St. Paul's letters, that's been aired to coincide with the current Pauline year. The play is written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett.
The last episode told of Paul's trial before the Roman governor Felix and his successor Festus, who believed Paul innocent but was obliged to send him to Rome after Paul had appealed to Caesar. Today you will hear of Paul's voyage to Rome, of the storm and shipwreck which brings him and the company to the island of Malta and eventually to Rome.
And so it was that when it had been decided he should sail for Italy, Paul and some other prisoners were handed over to a centurion called Julius of the Augustan cohort. They boarded a vessel from Adramyttium, bound for ports on the Asiatic coast, and put to sea. They had Aristarchus with them, a Macedonian of Thessalonica. Next day they put in at Sidon, and Julius was considerate enough to allow Paul to go to his friends and to be looked after.
And so my mother just took all the idols we had in the house and smashed them into bits, didn't she, Paul?
She did indeed, Aristarchus. What a woman. What a Christian. I don't know what we'd have done without her that time, Silvanus and I. When that mob descended on Jason's place. You weren't with us in Thessalonica, were you, Luke?
No, I was still in Philippi.
But there was young Timothy, remember? Mm. And you left him with me then. Mother used to try out all her new recipes on him. He had such an appetite.
Dear Timothy. Always worrying about me, isn't he, Luke?
He's devoted to you, Paul. He hated saying goodbye. Where is he now? Did you really send him to Ephesus?
Yes, it was better that way. He can do so much good there.
He was terrified you were going to be murdered by the Jews. And that last time in the temple, well, I wasn't there. I was staying with John and the Lord's mother. Oh, such an experience. Such an honour. She told me...
All aboard for Myra!
Oh, they're calling us. We must go. Come, Paul. Give me a hand. And there's the ship's boy come to look for us. All right, we're coming.
Thanks, Aristarchus. My old bones are beginning to rebel at all these constant departures. And so, Luke, you were saying, the Blessed Mother...
It's hard to put it into words, Paul. I've been making notes, though.
From Sidon, they put to sea again. But as the winds were against them, they sailed under the lee of Cyprus, then across the open sea off Cilicia and Pamphylia, taking a fortnight to reach Myra in Lycia. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship leaving for Italy and put them aboard. For some days they made little headway and had difficulty in making Cnidus. The wind would not allow them to touch there, so they sailed under the lee of Crete off Cape Salmone and struggled under the coast until they came to a place called Fair Havens, near the town of Lasea.
I don't like it. Weather's too far gone. Look how long it took us to get to Cnidus, and then we couldn't even drop anchor.
We're lucky to have gotten here.
Yeah, and if you ask me, we should stay put. Never known any good to come off of putting to sea so long after the great fast. Oh, look, captain's arrived.
And he's got that centurion with him.
Yeah, well, that means business. Let's hang around.
Yeah, no the worst.
And how much long do you think it'll be?
Oh, before the wind changes. Oh, not long now. Day or two, I should say. Then we'll make for Phoenix. It's a better harbor than this. For wintering, I mean.
I wonder what that Paul fellow thinks. He's been at sea a lot.
Who, your Roman prisoner?
Roman citizen, to be exact. Yeah, I'll get him to join us. He's probably praying with the other prisoners.
As you please. Though I can't think what he can teach a sailor. Go ahead, though. You're in charge of this expedition.
I'll be right back, Captain. Have another rum on me.
Landlubbers. A whole lot of them. A grain ship full of soldiers and political prisoners.
A great deal of time had been lost, and navigation was already hazardous, since it was now well after the time of the fast. So Paul gave them a warning.
Friends, I can see this voyage will be dangerous.
Oh, no.
Yes, dangerous, and that we run the risk of losing not only the cargo and the ship, but also our lives as well.
Oh. You don't know what you're talking about. Have you ever sailed an Alexandrian corn ship? They're the finest vessels on the sea today.
The wind. Captain!
The wind's changed!
The south wind!
The wind! The wind's changed!
But the centurion took more notice of the captain and the ship's owner than of what Paul had said. And since the harbor was unsuitable for wintering, the majority were for putting out from there in the hope of wintering at Phoenix, a harbor in Crete, facing southwest and northwest. A southern breeze sprang up, and thinking their objective as good as reached, they weighed anchor and began to sail past Crete, close inshore. But it was not long before a hurricane, the northeaster as they call it, burst on them from across the island. The ship was caught and could not be turned head on to the wind, so they had to give way to it and let themselves be driven. They ran under the lee of a small island called Cauda, and managed with some difficulty to bring the ship's boat under control. They hoisted it aboard, and with the help of tackle, bound cables round the ship.
It's an island!
What are they trying to do, Captain?
We're frapping her!
We're frapping her?
Look, see how the cables have passed under a hull? And then we tighten them with a windlass. It's just a precaution. Saves the strain on our timbers.
Then, afraid of running aground on the Syrtis banks, they floated out the sea anchor and so let themselves drift.
But we're drifting!
That's it, soldier. Only way. Or we'll be blown onto Syrtis. Sandbanks. Quicksands. Understand?
No ship can escape them once she's on them. That's why we strake sail.
Lower the gear, that's it.
All hands on deck! Collect your prisoners, Centurion. We need every man's assistance.
All hands on deck!
And as they were making very heavy weather of it, the next day they began to jettison the cargo, and the third day they threw the ship's gear overboard with their own hands. For a number of days, both the sun and the stars were invisible, and the storm raged unabated, until at last they gave up all hope of surviving. Then, when they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among the men and spoke.
Friends, if you had listened to me and not put out from Crete, you would have spared yourselves all this damage and loss. But now I ask you not to give way to despair. There will be no loss of life at all, only of the ship.
What does he mean?
How does he know?
Who are you? How can you tell?
Don't listen to him, he's raving.
No, none will be lost, I tell you. None will be lost.
Last night, there was standing beside me an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve.
Who is he? What God is this?
Shh, listen!
And the angel said to me, "Do not be afraid, Paul. You are destined to appear before Caesar, and for this reason, God grants you the safety of all who are sailing with you. So take courage, friends. I trust in God that things will turn out just as I was told. But we are to be stranded on some island."
Hey, just supposing he's right.
What do you mean?
Well, if we do get near an island, I think we should, you know...
I got you, yeah. Let them all sink.
Shh, mum's the word. Captain's coming.
Here, you two. What are you doing idling when the ship's in danger? You, take up your post in the bow. Keep your eyes open for land.
Aye, sir.
And you, come along with me astern. We must be ready to take soundings of the water shallows.
On the 14th night, they were being driven one way and another across the Sea of Adria, that sea between Greece, Italy, and Africa, when about midnight, the crew sensed that land of some sort was near.
I can hear something. Can't you?
Breakers. Captain, listen. Do you hear that?
Yes. Get the lid, quick. Call the mate.
They took soundings and found 20 fathoms. After a short interval, they sounded again and found 15 fathoms. Then, afraid that they might run aground somewhere on a reef, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight.
Hey, now's our chance. It'll be light soon.
Right, call the others.
What's going on?
We're laying anchors.
When some of the crew tried to escape from the ship and lower the ship's boat into the sea as though to lay out anchors from the bows, Paul spoke to the centurion and his men.
Unless those men stay on board, you cannot hope to be saved.
Here, you! Move away from that boat there! Men, cut the ropes! Set the boat adrift! No one's to try and escape!
So the soldiers cut the boat's ropes and let it drop away. Now they had all been without food for a long time, and just before daybreak, Paul urged them all to have something to eat.
For 14 days, you have been in suspense, going hungry and eating nothing. Let me persuade you to have something to eat. Your safety is not in doubt. Not a hair of your heads will be lost.
With these words, he took some bread, gave thanks to God in front of them all, broke it, and began to eat. Then they all plucked up courage and took something to eat themselves. There were 276 souls on board that ship. When they had eaten what they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the corn overboard into the sea. When day came, they did not recognize the land, but they could make out a kind of bay with a beach. They planned to run the ship aground on this if they could. They slipped the anchors and left them to the sea, and at the same time loosened the lashings of the rudders. Then, hoisting the foresail to the wind, they headed for the beach. But the cross currents carried them into a shoal, and the vessel ran aground. The bows were wedged in and stuck fast, while the stern began to break up with the pounding of the waves. The soldiers planned to kill the prisoners for fear that any should swim off and escape. But the centurion was determined to bring Paul safely through and would not let them do what they intended. He gave orders that those who could swim should jump overboard first and so get ashore, and the rest follow either on planks or on pieces of wreckage. In this way, all came safe and sound to land. Once they had come safely through, they discovered that the island was called Malta. The inhabitants treated them with unusual kindness. They made them all welcome and lit a huge fire because it had started to rain and the weather was cold. Paul had collected a bundle of sticks and was putting them on the fire when a viper, brought out by the heat, attached itself to his hand. When the natives saw the creature hanging from his hand, they said to one another,
"Ah! Look, a viper! Oh, it's on his hand!
He must be a murderer, that man. He may have escaped the sea, but mark my word, divine vengeance will not let him live."
"Oh, I want to see what happens."
"Oh, no, I couldn't. Well, maybe I'll just wait a bit."
But Paul shook the creature off into the fire and came to no harm, although they were expecting him at any moment to swell up or drop dead on the spot. After they had waited a long time without seeing anything out of the ordinary happen to him, they changed their minds and began to say he must be a god.
"Well, I don't know what to say. The man must be..."
"Oh, he's no mortal man, I say. He's a god, that's what."
"You think so?"
"Oh, I do. He's a charmed being."
"You know what? I think we should tell the chief."
"Why?"
"Well, he should know about these people and this man."
"Yes, you're right. And anyway, they can't just stay here. Well, there are the caves, of course."
"Oh, they die of cold. Some of them look that way already."
"Oh, well, let's go and tell him right away."
In the neighborhood, there were estates belonging to the chief man of the island, the prefect, whose name was Publius. He received them and entertained them hospitably for 3 days. Now it so happened that Publius' father was in bed, suffering from feverish attacks and dysentery. Paul went in to see him, and after a prayer, he laid his hands on the man and healed him. When this happened, the other sick people on the island came as well and were cured. They presented many gifts to them, and when they sailed, they put on board whatever provisions they needed.
"Down the hole! All prisoners, report at once!
All aboard, please!"
And so, at the end of 3 months, they set sail in a ship that had wintered in the island. She came from Alexandria, and her figurehead was the twins. They put in at Syracuse and spent 3 days there. From there, they followed the coast up to Regium. After 1 day there, a south wind sprang up, and on the second day, they made Puteoli. There they found some disciples and were much rewarded by staying a week with them. And so, they came to Rome.
You have been listening to episode 23 of our radio drama, To the Ends of the Earth. Taking part in this episode were John Gayford, Jack Gillen, David Horton, Anna Mazzotti, Adrian McCourt, Bob Mickens, Patrick Nicholson and Veronica Wells. The sound engineer was Tommaso Pallottino. The programme was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett in the studios of Vatican Radio in Rome.